Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow, mad cow, mad cow, line dance song.
Hey there, Sign Guy Nation. Welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. Sign Guy with you like normal. QT Volk should be joining us soon, I believe. And real fast, before we jump into things with our guest, I want to let you know that if you're looking for some live wrestling tomorrow night in Anaheim, California, Gold Coast Federation is doing a live streaming, so you can catch them on the streaming services. Just look them up on your Google machines and you'll find Gold Coast Federation. You should be able to find the stream. Northwest Pro running tomorrow in Post Falls, Idaho at Curly's. And due to the restrictions being tightened down a little bit, definitely if you're heading out to watch some local wrestling, make sure the shows are still running. Some shows scheduled for this week have been canceled or postponed, so do your due diligence. Make sure you get out there and support wrestling if you have it near you. Be safe, and also make sure things are still on schedule for you. But without further ado, I want to bring our guest on right away. He is out of the great city of Chicago, Illinois. Joey Roth, welcome to the show.
Thank you so very much, and happy Friday the 13th for everybody out there listening. And if you're outside at some campground and some guy in a hockey mask comes up to you and says hello, I'd run the other way.
I think that's great advice. Now, since today is your first time with us, we are going to start you out today with our traditional first-timer question. What led to you getting into the business of professional wrestling?
You have to blame one person for getting me into the business of the professional wrestling world, and that is Rowdy Roddy Piper. Little backstory, when I was a little kid, Saturday mornings, you know, everybody liked to watch cartoons and whatnot. Me, I like to go outside. I was always outside with my friends riding bikes, BMX bikes, going out there and having a good time. One Saturday, I woke up, and it was raining. It was pouring outside, cats and dogs all over the street. So I went ahead and I decided to turn on the television, and I saw something that looked like a boxing ring. Now, I never knew what wrestling was before that. And then some guys were, like, in the ring. I wasn't paying much of attention to it. And the next thing you know, some guy says, now, Piper's Pit. And I saw this one guy walk out wearing a dress, sitting next to a guy from Columbus, Ohio. So from right then to there, I was hooked. And I was hooked even more as soon as Roddy Piper beat up Frankie Williams. That was the very first thing I ever saw in pro wrestling. Then right after that, we got cable. And then, of course, the whole rock and wrestling thing happened. And I was just hooked from there. And I knew that was something I had to do.
I believe that might have been even the first ever Piper's Pit. When you first saw Rowdy Roddy Piper and you're watching him beat up Frank Williams, did it click with you that that was something that you wanted to do, or was it a while before you actually started considering your own career in wrestling?
Well, the thing is, I've always wanted to be an actor. I mean, I can remember my parents tell me the very first thing I ever watched on television was The Three Stooges. So that is something I've always wanted to do, was to be an actor. And then here I see somebody on TV. You know, he's not the biggest, most imposing person out there, but it's just that attitude that, you know, I'm better than everybody else attitude, and that swagger, and that just the way he handled himself. And I'm like, you know what? That is kind of like how I was in school. You know, I was always a loudmouth. I was always, you know, cracking jokes, making fun of people, not in a bad way, you know, just being the class clown. And then I figured, hey, you know what? This guy gets paid to do something like this. That is exactly what I would love to do.
Obviously, in wrestling, there's a correlation between acting and drama and athletics and several other things that go into making pro wrestling what it is. When you were considering a career in wrestling, did you actively seek out acting and athletic opportunities to prepare for wrestling, or did you keep the two things separate until you got into wrestling?
I kept the two things separate for a while. Now, we got to remember, that was, what, early 85 I discovered wrestling. I didn't get into wrestling until 2003. All right. So during all that time, I did look at different wrestling schools. I did look at the Monster Factory in Jersey with Larry Sharp. But I was, you know, moving to Chicago to Jersey when you're like 16 years old or whatever. It just wasn't feasible at the time. Then in 1988, I looked at the Hart School up in Calgary, and I still have the brochure for that. Now, the thing is, if I would have went to the Hart School at that time, I would have been in the same class as Jericho and Lance Storm, which is just kind of like, holy, you know, which would have been cool. Of course, I don't think I would have lasted as long as they did. But it was something that I always wanted to do. And back then, it was difficult to get into the business without traveling far to go to a school. But then, you know, once you find out about the indies, that's when the whole entire new door opens, and that's how, you know, I finally got my start. Also, thanks to another Hall of Famer, the Honky Tonk Man. He's the one who directed me into the right area to start getting trained and everything back in 2003.
A while ago, we were joined on this very program by someone you know extremely well, that being Roxy Hart. I know that Roxy has been very instrumental the last several years of your career. What can you tell us about how you came to be partnered up with Roxy Hart?
Well, Roxy Hart, my better half, I've known for well over 10 years. We did theater together. We were in a small production, a small place that most people might have heard of. It's called Pride and Prejudice. Yes, I was Mr. Darcy. I was the lead of the play, and she played one of the sisters of Elizabeth Bennet down there. And, you know, she was with somebody else at the time, and I was with somebody else at the time, so no, nothing happened there. But 10 years later, we met at another audition, and, you know, one thing leads to another. And, you know, since I'm the baddest of the bad and the coolest of the cool, of course I'm going to need a hot chick to accompany me to the ring. So I'm like, hey, Roxy, want to join me? And the rest is history.
Now, she, of course, has been by your side, like you said, for a while.
Yes.
When we had her on the show, we talked about her wanting to branch out a little bit, getting to the ring announcing aspect of it. Ring announcing is a very underrated aspect of pro wrestling. A lot of people don't appreciate how much a very good ring announcer can enhance a show. What do you think of Roxy Hart spreading her wings and getting into ring announcing?
Well, actually, Roxy has spread her wings, and now she hosts her own Facebook, soon-to-be YouTube show called Roxy's Room. It's basically like how Missy Hyatt had Missy's Manor, and it's kind of like a Piper's Pit segment where Roxy's going to be interviewing several wrestlers from Chicagoland Championship Wrestling, which will be debuting soon on Amazon Prime. And Roxy's going to be having her own show doing that. And also she's going to be a part of that show doing backstage interviews. So she kind of bypassed being a ring announcer and, you know, into that frying pan and jumped into the fire of backstage of being the girl on the spot who's going to be getting all the interviews from all the winners and losers.
Well, I think fans will definitely look forward if it gets to the YouTube, and they should flock over to Facebook and check that out.
Yep.
Like we said, you are out of Chicago, and Chicago, for most wrestling fans, is a very historical city. They've had pro wrestling in Chicago pretty much from the start of the television era. The first national televised wrestling came out of the Marigold Arena in Chicago, Illinois. the AWA and Dick the Bruiser's WWA sort of shared Chicago. You've had countless major pay-per-view events held out of Chicago over the last 30 years or so. There's so much history there. Do you yourself delve into the history of pro wrestling in Chicago very much?
Oh, for sure. You talk about the Marigold, and of course, that's where, you know, Dick the Bruiser, Bobby Heenan got his start down there as well. My uncle used to be a security guard for the Marigold and the old amphitheater in Chicago, and when wrestling came to town. Now, this is what he tells me. When I was an itty-bitty, teeny-weeny newborn baby, he took me to these shows, and he swears up and down that Bobby the Brain Heenan actually babysat me a bunch of times. Of course, I don't remember that. Is it true? I don't know, but it makes for a good story. But, yeah, definitely. I remember in the 80s that the WWF would come to the Rosemont Horizon every 4 to 6 weeks, and I would be there every 4 to 6 weeks. It started out at a place called UIC Pavilion, then moved to the Rosemont Horizon, United Center, back to the Rosemont, and I was there with my friends for every single show. We even had preferred parking at the Rosemont. They would see our car roll up, and they're like, you know where to go. We would go to the spot. I mean, I've seen so many house show matches that would put anything that's on TV right now to shame.
Now, Chicago, to my knowledge, is where the infamous chant, "We Want Blood," originated. Chicago has long been known as a city that likes to see the rougher, brawling aspects of wrestling, a lot of blood, a lot of big moves. Does that part of pro wrestling personally appeal to you, or do you see things a bit differently than most people out of Chicago?
I mean, the blood and guts of it all, it does have some place in wrestling for it. I mean, if it's in a steel cage or a false count anywhere or a no DQ match, fine, yes, definitely. Let's have both of these guys get busted open. But to me, I like more the entertainment aspect. I like people who like to put on a show. All right, that's why you talk about wrestlers like the Honky Tonk Man. He's not the greatest wrestler of all time, but he's going to make you hate him so much that you're going to drop down your $20. Yes, back then, tickets were $20 to go see wrestling. You're going to put your $20 out there to see him get beat up. Bobby the Brain Heenan bled all over Chicago, but then when he became a manager, he didn't bleed that often. But you know what? You put down that $20 to see Bobby Heenan get beat up. You put down that $20 to see, you know, Hulk Hogan beat up the Magnificent Morocco. You always had to go to those heels, and it was the entertainment aspect to be able to have an audience just to look at them and make them hate you or just say, you know, you guys stink, and then have 15,000 people, you know, just throw things at you and swear at you. That is what drew me to professional wrestling. Blood and guts is fine for when it's needed. When it's, you know, thrown in there just for the sake of having it in there, that right there I could do without.
I know for your own career, you travel around the Chicagoland area, and you also hit places like Wisconsin and Northwest Indiana. For your own personal viewpoint, what would you say has been the worst trip that you have ever made for pro wrestling?
The worst trip was a place called EWF in Converse, Indiana. Now, EWF, I believe it stood for Extreme Wrestling Federation. It was done by Hurricane Jason Maples. Now, the Fed was awesome. We had great times over there, the group I was with, but it's like 5 hours away from where I'm living at in Chicago. So you drive, I was driving 5 hours one way, you get a $185 speeding ticket. You forget about the time difference between Chicago and Converse, Indiana. It's an hour time difference. So you jump an hour on your way there. So we forgot about that. So we're thinking, all right, we have an hour before the show doors open. We get there. We find out, hey, you guys got to get in the ring for a promo to open up the show. So we literally drop the bag, run out there, do a promo, run back. So just logistically driving that 5 hours one way, and getting that $185 speeding ticket and then driving 5 hours back after you get beat up. I mean, I had my nose broke and two black eyes trying to drive that 5 hours back. You know, that's what made it the worst, but it's also the best. because you're traveling with your buddies, you're traveling with other wrestlers, and so what you do is you just keep on talking about all these different things that you want to do, all these different gimmicks you want to come up with, all these different sayings you want to do, all these different things you want to do in wrestling. So it's, you know, it's tenfold. You know, it's bad for the trip, but it's great for the experience.
One of the things that in 2020 seems to be more important than ever for pro wrestling is the use of television. Here in the current times that we're in, most independent companies that are still able to run shows have some sort of presence, be it live streaming via Twitch or on one of the many Roku device apps or through YouTube Live, however it is they do it. Some promotions even have traditional broadcast TV. But from this point going forward, how important do you think it is for wrestlers to really learn and understand how televised wrestling works?
Oh, I think it's very important. Case in point, like I said, I'm part of Chicagoland Championship Wrestling. I do commentary for them with my buddy Steve Aaron. And we are on Amazon Prime. We also have a deal with a TV company in England. We have a deal with a TV company in Japan. So hopefully next year, once the road opens up, we're going to be traveling to all these different countries for Chicagoland Championship Wrestling. So, and we do have a show, and TV is so important because, like, when you're in the ring and you're punching someone in the face, you want to make sure the camera's going to pick that up. You don't want your back to the camera. You always got to make sure where you are at in that ring. And you always have to keep out of the corner of your eye where the camera is situated at, and also you want to make sure your opponent's not going to kick you so hard in the face that your head spins around. So it is very, very important that these kids today know exactly how to manipulate the camera work, how to manipulate where they are at in the ring. If you're sitting there punching somebody for a count of 10 in the corner, you want to make sure that camera's there. You don't want to whip somebody into the corner and the camera's on the other side. Because then that camera guy has to run, if there's only one camera, depending on how they cut it, you don't want that camera guy to have to sprint over there to find out where you're at. You need to find out where they're at. And that is sorely missing with a lot of wrestling I see on YouTube and Facebook and whatnot. These kids just need to know where that camera is at all times.
Do you think enough wrestlers today have taken an interest in the actual production end of television and learning the techniques as far as how the camera angles work and how best to make the audio work and what goes into getting the product onto the screens for the viewers to watch? Or do you think that today's wrestlers tend to just focus on the in-ring and let somebody else handle all the technical details?
I 100% believe that these wrestlers, most of the wrestlers today, they go in the ring and expect everybody else to do it for them. They want to go in there and they want to have their match. And yes, they're great matches, but again, you also need to know where that camera's at. A lot of wrestlers today look at the camera guy as, well, that's your job. You need to make sure you're in the right spot. Well, no, I mean, everybody knows that wrestling is like a machine. So many different moving parts, you know, it's also like a slippery slope. You want to go left, but then all of a sudden you hit a patch of ice and you go right. So you just got to make sure when you go right or left that camera is going to catch it. The camera person doesn't know what you're going to do. And same thing with the audio, same thing with, you know, all that kind of stuff. You just want to make sure that the wrestler has a working knowledge on how the TV end works. So I do see a lot of guys going in there going, well, you know what, I did my match, and they get mad at the camera guy going, well, how come you didn't catch that? Well, and then the camera guy is like, well, you weren't in my area. So, I mean, that's what the worker needs to understand. The worker needs to understand that for it to be on camera, it needs to be in front of the camera. And a lot of people definitely need schooling on something like that.
Now, one of the things that a lot of wrestlers also at times seem to not understand is making themselves stand out to the viewers as far as their gear goes. A lot of wrestlers will wrestle a match and they often have undistinguishable sets of gear where they'll be in the same color gear, so it's hard for the fans to differentiate. How important do you think getting custom gear that is going to separate them from everyone else on the show is in today's landscape?
I love that you asked that question. I was actually thinking about that earlier myself. I'm going to give you the best piece of advice I ever got right before I got into professional wrestling. It was given to me by the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. I asked him one time, I asked him, Jimmy, how does one make themselves noticeable in wrestling? He looked at me. He took his sunglasses off. And if you know Jimmy Hart, he don't take his sunglasses off very often. He took his glasses off, looked me in the eye, and said, if you invest in your gimmick will invest in you. Okay? That right there is, if anybody wrestling out there listens to one thing I say, and you should be listening to everything I say since I am the greatest, you take that to heart. You invest in yourself. You invest in that gimmick is going to invest in you. When I do a match, all right, I wrestled a tournament for the Chicagoland Championship title belt for IPW, which, by the way, today I have celebrated 593 days with. I wrestled three different times. I went out there in three different outfits, you know, because these people are going to see you three different times, and I don't want to give them the same thing twice. So if they don't remember anything from the show, they're going to remember Joey Roth came out there in a blue outfit. He came out there in a gold outfit. He came out there in a white outfit. And all these are custom made. I mean, I could understand times are tough. If you have to get something off of eBay or one of those websites where you could get some kind of certain gear, that's what you have to do. But don't live in that gear. Okay, that is why you keep on have to evolve yourself. It's the Madonna Lady Gaga complex. You know, once you wear a dress full of meat, that's what they're going to expect from you. Then you switch it, and then you come out looking elegant in a ball gown. I mean, that's what people just don't understand is if you invest in yourself, invest in that gimmick is going to invest in you. And I've had people go to me, it's like, you know what? You changed three different times to come out here for those three matches, or when I manage, I always wear different outfits if my guys have to go out there more than once. And that is something that they're going to remember because I take pride in the way I look. A lot of these other wrestlers, sometimes they show up to the matches wearing what they're going to wrestle in. How can you show up to a match driving your car, I don't know, when they roll out of bed, put their tights on, they roll into the arena like that, and they go right into the ring. That's not showing pride in themselves. And I wish a lot more wrestlers would, you know, take more pride in themselves and invest in their gimmicks.
Now, when you do commentary, is it something that you think about more so or less than if you're wrestling as far as what you're going to wear to that show? Does that different role give you a different amount of importance as far as look and presentation?
Oh, I think so. Here's a typical thing when I do a show, okay? If I'm going to commentate a show like I did for Chicagoland Championship Wrestling, airing soon on Amazon Prime, when I go to the show, I wear one outfit. I'll wear maybe a pair of jeans, a Roddy Piper shirt, and a leather jacket. Then I'll change into whatever I'm going to wear for commentary. Then after I'm done with that, I go back into the dressing room, and then I change into a different outfit to go home. So I am not wearing the same thing I arrived in. I'm wearing something totally different. And people notice that. To me, that's just taking pride in what you're doing because, you know, hell, ask any of us wrestlers, we're all superstars, right? Of course, you want to act like you're a superstar. So that's why you need to take pride in something like that. You're very rarely going to see me wearing the same thing twice. And I know people are like, I can't afford something like that. But if you want to be in this kind of a business, you're going to have to invest. Invest in yourself. So when I'm doing commentary, you know, I'm going to wear a nice shirt, I'm going to wear a nice pair of pants and a nice jacket and all that stuff. After the match, I'm, you know, just like when I manage, it's, if I manage one guy, I mean, when I did a POW show last year, managing my BMI, you know, I'm leading the Bruiser Jamie Race wearing a white outfit. Then the next match, Brett taking Mike Idol's wrestling, I'm right there in the hallway changing so I could go out there in a different outfit. It just gives people something that's just to look forward to.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I'm sure he has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things over to him.
Awesome.
Welcome.
Thank you, Sangai. Hello, Joey.
Hello.
Mr. Roth, I saw your YouTube video called Joey Roth's rant on Man Cow. My question is,
yes.
How many current members are in the Hollywood Icon?
Unfortunately, the Hollywood Icon have disbanded for now. Hollywood Icon gimmick was a few years ago. I now lead a new group. We are now called the World Famous Fabulous Idols, which is myself, the rock star Johnny Nye, and Rico Flash Paisley. We work out of a promotion called Rocket Pro Wrestling out of Joliet, Illinois. But the thing with the Hollywood Icons, if you look at that group, you saw Big Pauly Bonifito, myself, there's just two of us still standing. That is Joey Roth and Max Holiday. Okay, we might not be together as a team anymore, but we just did a show last week, Russell Rage at POW, where he won our the POW, the Illinois Championship, the Midwest Championship, and my tag team won the Tag Team Championship. So even though we're the Hollywood Icons are not together anymore, we're still winning title belts all over the place. But never say never. That group will come back sooner or later. Only we know when.
Oh my gosh. What, does Max Holiday send out Christmas cards since they broke up to all the members? Max Holiday.
I think Max Moore sends them the boot coat too, which is just a boot to the face, except for me because, you know, I'm just way too cute to have something like that happen to me. But, the Icons, we still keep in touch with each other. All we need to do is flash that pinky in the sky like Batman, and we'll all reassemble.
Oh, okay. Flash the pinky. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, Mr.
Pinky's right.
When you made the video on or near Halloween, who was the lady in the lovely black miniskirt?
The one that I did this past weekend? One of them was Roxy Hart, okay? One of them was the valet, the babe of the BMI, Roxy Hart, because you guys all know that. But then there's another chick we have with us named Jillian. Miss Jillian, she is a legit opera singer, and she is one of our future surprises that I'm going to spring onto the ring very soon.
Oh, an opera singer. Has she ever worked with Luciano Pavarotti?
Well, she did do a conservatory and a whole bunch of other words I can't pronounce in Austria last year. So she was there for about half a year in training and doing shows and whatnot. So she's a legit deal. She'll have a CD coming out for people who still buy CDs. But, she's legit, but, you know, the fabulous, world-famous fabulous idols, Hollywood Icons, we're classy people now, all right? You know, we're not just, we ain't beer, your old lady, and cigarettes. We're wine, women, and song.
Ooh, okay. Wine, women, and song. Okay, very good.
Nice.
All right. Well, Mr. Roth, what was your Hollywood Icon candy budget for the fans? I saw in this video that you were passing out candy. Did you limit the amount of candy that you passed out to $3? That's my question.
Well, actually, since it was around Halloween time, we just went to different people's houses and just stole people's candy bags. And so it really didn't cost us anything. And, you know, people love us so much, all we have to do is just drive down the street and they're just throwing things at us.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Roth, in this Joey Roth rant on Man Cow video, was there a dance party afterwards?
Was there a what, I'm sorry?
Was there a dance party afterwards?
Of course there was a dance party afterwards because Man Cow didn't have the guts to show up. Guy, no, he wouldn't. I mean, we went on his show. We offered him to come to the ring so I could go ahead and tell him what kind of a fake and phony he was. I mean, I don't think he's even, you know, here in Chicago, I think he's on some kind of AM radio, which I think gets maybe 14 listeners because he has just, I think he's in a van behind an old Woolworths downtown trying to do a broadcast, so nobody's really listening to it. You know, more people see my face every day than they will Man Cow in 10 years. But yeah, we did a huge dance party. You know, we danced on his T-shirt. You know, we did a lot of other things with his T-shirt too. A lot of people blowing their noses on it. He's a fake. He's a fraud. He's a phony. He's never going to stand up to anything. And even way back then, we offered him so many chances. But, yeah, we had a huge dance party on that Fool's behalf.
Wow. All right. Now, Mr. Roth, speaking of dance parties, are you still a big fan of the Village People and their hit songs, Macho Man, YMCA, In the Navy, and their lesser-known hit, Key West?
I am definitely a fan of them. In fact, I liked them better when they were dressed up as specific characters. I didn't like the fact when they went all leather and disco. That was just not a really good look. I mean, you want the construction guy. You want the Native American guy. Tatanka. You want the policeman. You want the phone repair guy. But when they went all leather and glitter, I mean, that's something that I would wear to the ring. But that's not something the Village People should be wearing. I want my hardworking Village People. I don't want the glam Village People.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Roth, this may come as a surprise to you, but I got together with Stone Guy, and a week before this interview, I reached out to our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners, and I showed them this video, and I posed the question, based on your Man Cow video, whom among the Village People does Joey Roth most emulate? And I got back some results. Are you ready for the results?
I am ready for the results. I mean, I know who I emulate. Let's see what they say.
Okay. 40% of our Turnbuckle Turmoil fans say you are most like Felipe Rose, the Indian. 40%.
Ooh. Hey, how are you? Hey, how are you?
30% say that you are like Alex Briley, the sailor.
Ooh, in the Navy.
And 15% said you are like Randy Jones, the cowboy. 15%.
See, that right there, I've always been a Randy Jones fan. That's the one that I would have picked because, you know, I look pretty darn good in assless chaps. I always look good in a cowboy hat. And I've ridden enough girls that look like horses in my lifetime to definitely get my 8-second license.
Oh, my. Wow.
Oh, me. Oh, my.
To quote George Takei, yes. Okay.
Takei,
yes. Okay. And 10%, this is rounding out the survey, said Glenn Hughes, the leather-clad biker, is what you emulate. And 5% said Mark Musler, the construction worker.
Yeah, see, I'm not a big construction worker guy. I have too pretty of hands to be handling any wood.
Okay. Okay, very good. Well, now, Joey, speaking of this man-cow, man-cow reminds me of the topic of Pigman, who Kramer, on Seinfeld, insisted to Jerry, Elaine, and George that Pigman existed, and he even went into a hospital and searched for Pigman, who existed because Kramer said the government was doing genetic splicing. Do you remember this episode?
I remember that episode, and Man Cow, just like Pigman, was just an ugly little man.
Okay. All right.
But, yes, nobody's going to be running down the hallway trying to smuggle him out of the hospital. You know, I mean, especially, you know, I mean, somebody want to smuggle Man Cow into a hospital so they could bring him to the basement. You know what happens around the basement.
Well, if you look at Bob's Burgers, they are grinding up hamburger in the basement that may not be Bob's Burgers. Yes.
Well, and I don't want to eat a Bob's Burger. I'd rather drink at Roger's Place.
What is Roger's Place? What's that?
American Dad, Roger the Alien. I'd rather be up there drinking with him instead of eating some Bob's Burgers. I don't know Bob's Burgers.
Yes, they have an American Dad. They drink up in the attic. That's true.
Yes. That's where you're mostly going to find me.
Whoa, okay. Who's your favorite American Dad character then? Would it be Roger?
Oh, yeah. You got to love Roger. You know, anytime you have a 1600-year-old alien spitting out Rogu all over the place, you got to love that. That's something I could have in the world famous Fabulous Idols. You know, have Roger coming down there with an Idol shirt. You know, he could check everybody's oil. He could do anything.
Well, yes, that's true. That's a good choice. I think American Dad, he would be my number one character. But Klaus the Goldfish is a close second. Klaus.
Well, I'd use him as a German foreign object. You know, smack some in the face with him, and then he'd be like kind of like blinded, and then, you know, scoop him up from behind and pin him for the 1-2-3.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, Mr. Roth, Sign Guy earlier talked about this, the rough side of Chicago, the we want blood aspect. My question is, were you a big fan of the Nasty Boys?
Oh, Sags and Knobs. I did a show with them about a year and a half ago. I am not a fan of the Nasty Boys. And if I see Knobs and Sags again, I hate to admit this, but yes, I was a victim of the pit stop, okay? And it gave me gonorrhea of the eyes. It gave me hook and mouth disease of the nose. It made me almost regurgitate. It made me almost Rogu all over the place after I got my face shoved in Brian Knobbs' nasty, smelly, stinking pit. Now, if I ever see the Nasty Boys again, I'm going to go ahead. I have a few choice words for them. I mean, they were hitting me with chairs. They hit me with a wet floor sign. Those guys, I mean... You know, but of course, at the end of the match, I was still standing after that. Of course, I needed a lot of help, but, you know, those guys could definitely pack away the Modellos after a show.
Wow. Now, can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners where this pit stop took place?
This pit stop took place in, Justice, Illinois. It was in one of our Anarchy Rules. It was our yearly huge event. You know, it was the Nasty Boys and one other guy in a six-man tag team against the Empire, which I was managing at the time, Santana Starks, Mike Fierro, and some other guy I can't remember. Oh, the Cobra, the champion. Yeah, we were fighting, and next thing you know, I just jumped on the apron to tell the referee that, hey, you know, his shoe was untied, and somehow the referee got knocked out, and next thing you know, I'm being pulled in by the Nasty Boys, and then I had my face shoved in an armpit. That's disgusting stuff. I was going to have my lawyer, my lawyer Chris Half, go ahead and sue them on my behalf, but then they decided to run out of the area. Now I can't find them anymore. I went every alley. I've gone in every sewer. Well, I didn't go in every sewer. I've hired people to do stuff like that, and I can't find these Nasty Boys. They have a lawsuit coming to their hands, putting their hands on me. Jerks.
Wow.
All of them.
Well, they're probably in the sewer system of the Bronx, maybe.
Or maybe Allentown, Pennsylvania. Who knows where they are? Have you ever gone to Allentown? The whole entire place is a sewer.
Wow. Well, what would you rather have if you could travel back in time and arrange a stink face from Rikishi Fatu to take the place of the pit stop, would you?
I would definitely never do something like that. I would never lower myself to ever take a move like that from such for something like that. I mean, I don't care how much money Vince McMahon has. I would actually tell Vinnie Mac, no one walk out. There's no way. Piper told me one time, if he would have taken that stink face, that means any credibility he had would have gone right down the Bemis. All right? It's not going to happen. No way. No chance. No how. Somebody tried to do that to me one time in a match a long time ago, pulled his pants down and wanted to rub his butt in my face. You know, that didn't happen. It threw him over the top rope, took a beer can, smacked it upside his head, and walked out. That's not going to happen to me.
Oh, boy, yes. Okay. All right. Very good. Very good answer. Can you take a little bit of condolences that one of the Nasty Boys, I believe it was Brian Knobbs, he got fined for breaking wind near Miss Elizabeth. Can you take a little bit of solace out of that?
Well, you know, I feel sorry for Miss Elizabeth. Maybe that's why she turned to alcohol and drugs to get that kind of vision out of her head. But, you know, I do feel sorry for Liz for having to deal with something like that. And if I was Macho Man at the time, or even Lex Luger, Luger couldn't beat up anybody but a woman. But if Macho Man was there at the time, he should have definitely taken Knobbs and, you know, put an X where his face is. But when you're friends with Hulk Hogan, I guess it doesn't really matter. You can do anything you want.
Wow. Okay. Well said. Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Roth, we have a question from Northwest,
yes.
A Northwest wrestler named Lance Dean. And he asked, which segment would Joey Roth have done better on, Piper's Pit or Carlito's Cabana? That's what Lance
I
asked.
Okay, see, I think I would have done well at Carlito's Cabana. See, now I know everybody expects me to say Piper's Pit because, you know, me and Rod, I've stolen everything I possibly could for him, even stolen the villain name, which, by the way, I do have permission from the family to use, not like that other guy who can't use it anymore. But I think I'd rather be on Carlito's Cabana because, you know, I do like drinks with little umbrellas in them, sand around there and coconuts and everything. I just had to take Carly and throw him out.
Oh, okay.
We would call it Roth's Roomba Room. Or is it Ramba or Ramba? Roomba? Roomba's that vacuum cleaner. What is it, the Ramba? What is the dance?
Yes, Ramba, I believe. Yes.
Yes, we call it Roth's Ramba.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. Well, Mr. Roth, Jesse Ventura was quoted as saying, win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat. My question is, were you a big fan of the Jesse Ventura Gorilla Monsoon commentary team, especially due to the fact that they did 5 out of the 6 first WrestleMania commentaries? Were you a big fan of Jesse Ventura?
I was a huge fan. I still am a huge fan of Jesse Ventura, even as conspiracy theory stuff. I remember watching Jesse Ventura on Primetime Wrestling, not with Gorilla Monsoon, but with Jack Reynolds. Okay, it used to be just them two sitting on stools next to a table. Then it went to Jesse and Gorilla. Then, you know, Jesse and Gorilla left Primetime, but I'm more of a Bobby and Gorilla fan. But Jesse Ventura tells it like it is. I mean, that is right there. When you see him doing the commentary, you know, he's dedicating it to Jade, Tyrell, and Terry, his wife and his kids. He'd always do that at every WrestleMania. Jesse, he fought the McMahon, and Jesse won. So that's a guy you gotta be behind and just totally be enamored with, because, you know, he takes no anything from anybody, man.
Well, you know, Jesse Ventura, he had blood clots on his lungs, and they effectively ended his in-ring career. He claimed that these clots were a result of exposure to Agent Orange during his time in Vietnam as a Navy SEAL. Did you know this?
Yep. I did know that's Agent Orange. You know, that's why his last match was in Madison Square Garden against Barry Orton. He had that match. But, yeah, Jesse was a Navy SEAL, and Agent Orange, you know, that is one of my favorite California punk bands. You know, they're a great band, but yeah, I mean, it sucks for Jesse, but I think Jesse did better in commentary than he ever did in wrestling.
Wow. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, Joey, I also saw your YouTube video called Joey Roth Show, but what the title didn't tell you was that this was the premiere of the Joey Roth Show season 2. And this was way back, I think, sometime in 2011, and it took place in a red wrestling ring. Do you remember this debut of the Joey Roth season 2?
I do remember. That was Anarchy Pro Wrestling at the Berwyn's Eagle Club in Berwyn.
Oh, can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners how many members that you had with you on this Joey Roth show, too? I think it was 7.
Could have been 7. I know we had Big Paulie Bonifito. We had Max Holiday, myself. I believe Roxy Hart was there. Johnny Draven. I know we had Jack Carpenter was part of that. And I think we had another guy running around outside.
Wow, Johnny Draven. Well, out here in the Northwest, we have a wrestler named Draven Vargas.
Ooh, sounds good.
Yes.
I'm sure he's quite nifty in the ring.
Well, what's Johnny Draven up to these days?
Oh, Johnny Draven is now a proud daddy of a little baby boy, married a beautiful woman, now touring different parts of Ireland right now. He's out there living the life, living on his farm, taking care of people, and getting ready to make his comeback as soon as all this pandemic nonsense gets lifted. He will be back in a wrestling ring in 2021. So Draven saves again.
Wow. Well, what's he doing touring Ireland? Is he a musician?
Well, he's one of those beer testers. So he's working at some local brewery, tapping kegs and throwing beer barrels around. He's like a Donkey Kong, you know, trying to squish little Mario right there. He's taking care of some business right there at some brewery and doing a pretty good name, getting the Draven Brew brand all ready to hit the bars.
Have you yourself tasted some of the Draven Brew brand?
I have. I was in England last year with my beautiful Roxy Hart, and we did definitely partake. And I got to tell you right now, you think Guinness is chewy? Wait till you try Draven Brew. It makes Guinness look like water. It makes Guinness look like Kool-Aid. It makes Guinness look like Kool-Aid without sugar in it.
Wow, that's oh boy! Is there any chance, maybe a year or two down the road, that maybe the staff of Turnbuckle Turmoil could sample this brew?
I think you can, but you got to come to wherever we are at to get it. We're not going to send it to you. You got to come to us. We're not going to come to you. So if you get yourselves on an airplane, no matter where we're at, if we're going to be in L.A., if we're going to be in Toronto, if we're going to be in California, which L.A. is in, or we're going to be in Florida or Chicago, you guys fly out to wherever we are, and I'll make sure Draven has a whole bunch of the Draven Brew waiting for you. Now, I don't know if you can handle it. It will put hair on your teeth.
Oh, okay. Well, I just flew back from Toronto, and boy, are my arms tired. But yes. Okay. Well, Mr. Roth, you have a unique name, and you share it with one of the top 10 frontmen of rock history. That includes Johnny Wrightson of the Sex Pistols and Henry Rollins of Black Flag. I'm talking David Lee Roth of Van Halen.
Yes.
Did you know he was a certified EMT?
I did when he was in New York, and the reason why I know that is because he is my uncle. My Uncle Dave. Yes, so I have my Uncle Dave's blessing, and usually when he talks, I can't understand the damn word he says. But yeah, when he was living in New York back in the early to mid-90s, he was an EMT in the roughest part of New York City. And he liked doing that for the simple fact is that he could go to like an accident, or he could go to a gunshot victim, and they wouldn't know who he was, you know. So he didn't have to worry about paparazzi following him around. He wouldn't have to worry about signing an autograph while somebody has a corkscrew stuck in their forehead. You know, he would go there and was able to go ahead and get to the nitty-gritty of the undercity of New York City. That's a lot of itties.
Have you yourself used any Van Halen songs as your entrance music?
When I did my Joey Roth show, I would come down to the solo It's Showtime from A Little Ain't Enough CD. And, that would be the theme song I came out to for my Joey Roth show.
Oh, okay. Have you ever used TV Party by Black Flag as your entrance music? TV Party.
TV Party? I have not. I did. I do like TV Party. It is a very fun song. But no, I have not used anything like that from Black Flag. I should use some Henry. I do like a lot of Henry Rollins stuff. I like his solo stuff too. And he's also he's a swell guy to talk to as well. I've spent many a times with Henry.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr.
I do like
Roth,
his solo song on the Way to the Cage would be a good song for somebody going to the cage.
Ooh, On the Way to the Cage, yes.
Wow.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Roth, it was good talking with you. Thank you for answering the question from Lance Dean, and congratulations on the Turnbuckle Turmoil poll that said you most emulate Felipe Rose, the Indian, on the Village People. And at this time, I'm giving it back over to the Sun Guy.
Well, after tonight, I'm going to have to go ahead and find Tatanka and definitely challenge him to a tomahawk on a pole match.
Oh, Tatanka, yes. Yeah, that
Buffalo.
Is Tatanka. Back to you, Sun Guy. Tatanka.
Buffalo.
Yes.
Thank you, QT. Well, Joey Roth, one of the things that a lot of wrestlers get into at some point in their career is the promoting aspect of it. What would you say are the odds of you eventually wanting to open up your own promotion and being a wrestling promoter?
See, I would probably suffer from lead poisoning because I don't want the pencil. I more so would like to help out people with promos and marketing themselves. Like I said before, marketing their gimmicks and whatnot. That is what I would most likely end up doing. That's what I also do. That's what I do for some different promotions as well. I'm more about the creative aspect. I don't want to book, but creative is something I could definitely see myself doing when my in-ring career is over. I think I have a lot to offer that because, like I said, I've been trained by the best, and I've never had the pay to be on stage. I've always got all my acting jobs just because I'm the greatest. But I could definitely see myself being creative and booking. Yeah, that's not for me. Too many people hate you, and too many people hate me enough as it is already.
One of the other things that wrestlers do to sort of give back to the business at some point in time is training the next crop of wrestlers, is being a trainer, whether it's your own school or training at someone else's school, something that you've ever considered?
Well, like I said, I've done that before. I've been invited to different wrestling academies to help them with their promo skills and marketing themselves. So, I mean, like I said, if ever it came to the point for me to open up my own wrestling school, I don't think I would do something like that. I would more likely open my own acting school. I definitely want to have my own theater and something like that, which is going to happen next year. So I could definitely train these people how to find that camera, how to get their characters going, how to get their gimmicks to invest in them. That is what I want to do. Teaching people how to bump, there's enough people to do that out there right now, and I'll let them handle that.
Now, we do have another question someone wants to know, if you are a fan of Hurricane Helms at all.
Shane Helms, yeah, I don't mind Hurricane Helms. I thought he had a pretty good gimmick when he finally broke out with that character. I didn't really care too much for Three Count until Tank Abbott joined the group. But Hurricane Helms, yeah, I think he's a fine athlete. I don't know what he's doing mixed up with that AEW garbage, but I would like to see him, you know. That's another guy who took a gimmick and ran with it, and he still lives it till this day. I mean, look at him. He's still getting booked as Hurricane. Of course, I think he's definitely one of the good ones. He could teach a lot of people. I mean, unfortunately, I believe he got furloughed from up north, so that's why he's kind of like bouncing around doing nothing. But, yeah, I think he's pretty good.
Now, you talked a lot about being a fan of Rowdy Roddy Piper. One of the other people that in that similar vein was a very, very hated member of wrestling that may not get the credit they fully deserve for their contribution was Andy Kaufman. Were you a big fan of what Andy Kaufman did in professional wrestling?
Yes, I am a huge fan of Andy Kaufman, and, you know, another guy who did a lot of things outside around Chicago. I mean, he used to sit in a cardboard box on a street corner in Chicago with a sign that says "See Andy Kaufman for a dollar." So he would put in a dollar in the box. He would pull down a little shade, look in it for half a second, and pull the shade back up.
One of the things that Andy Kaufman did that I don't think a lot of people recall is he did a documentary with Fred Blassie called "My Breakfast with Blassie," where it was Fred Blassie and Andy Kaufman having breakfast and just talking for about an hour and a half. Did you ever get to see the film My Breakfast with Blassie?
Yes, I did, and that was filmed at the diner where Andy Kaufman would also be a busboy at night. He never thought, even when he got taxi, even when he was a TV star, he would still bus at this one diner in Hollywood. Oh, yeah, I saw that, you know. Fred Blassie had no idea what he was getting himself into, especially when he was trying to give him the wet nap that wasn't, you know, wet from Japan or something like that.
Well, we're down to the last few minutes in the show today, and I want to give you ample time. If there's anything you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything, social medias, upcoming appearances, your merchandise, your favorite laundromat, anything at all, floor is yours.
Well, I am Joey Roth. You can find me on Facebook under the Main Event Villain, which means I am the most hated in all of professional wrestling. I'm most hated definitely all around the Chicagoland area. And speaking of the Chicagoland area, POW Entertainment. Last week, I just became the manager of the World Tag Team Champions of BMI, Breathtaking Mike Idol, and the Bruiser Jamie Race, along with the babe of BMI, Roxy Hart. We have a show coming up December 17th at Rumpole's in Twin Lakes, Wisconsin. And yes, that show will go on. And also Chicagoland Championship Wrestling, the premier wrestling company anywhere, debuting next month on Amazon Prime. We're going to be on Fight TV in England. We have a TV deal in Japan. We are going worldwide, baby. And, yes, you are going to see Joey Roth, Roxy Hart, Chris Logan, Steve Aaron, John Buller, the Sin City Playboys, all over your television very soon. You want to find out what's going to happen with Joey Roth? Facebook, the Main Event Villain. I don't do no Twitter, okay? Twitter has 140 characters you can only type with. And believe me, I'm a lot more than 140.
Joey Roth, it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. I wish you the best of luck with all the promotions there in the Chicagoland area that you're associated with currently. And hopefully we'll get to do this again sometime down the road.
I am available anytime you need me. So thank you very much for having me on. And everybody right now, please get off your speakers because you are no longer going to hear my voice.
All right, fans, definitely check out Joey Roth if he's at a show near you. Check him out on the YouTubes. Great wrestler, great commentator. You'll enjoy him. Definitely, if there's some wrestling near you this week, go check it out if you feel safe enough to do so. Looks like a lot of shows are going to be postponed and canceled in the next couple of weeks. So while you have it, take advantage if that's something you want to do. We'll be back with you Sunday afternoon. Our guest is Digger James. We are looking forward to having Digger James on the show. So join us Sunday, and we'll talk to you then.